If this is your first time or you're a visitor, you've probably been several times because I've been away a bit, and so I'm sorry. Nice to see you. My name's David. I'm married to Alison. Thank you. And we're on a series this over summer called Look Left, Look Right, Look All Around You. Or Look Around You. And we've been going through a number of things to do with relationships and being aware of people around us. And this is part two of What Do You See? And we're calling it Who Is My Neighbor? I'm going to read from Luke chapter 10. I think, by the way, we're having a few PA challenges because the crowd who went to Ashburnham nicked the best PA and they haven't come back yet. So I apologize if you're sitting right in that corner because you don't want to hear, but if you can't hear, that's why we're restricted in our equipment. Summer is my... I love summer. Don't you love summer? It's my favorite day of the year, isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, you're in a happy mood today, I can tell. Let's look at Luke chapter 10, verses 25 onwards. On one occasion, an expert in the law, so this is the Gospels are, this is Luke's Gospel, it's a biography about Jesus that Luke wrote, and he's telling a story about one of the many interactions Jesus had with the authorities. So on one occasion, an expert in the law would have been the equivalent, in some countries today where there's Sharia law in Muslim countries, the law of the land, the jurisprudence is executed by the clerical police. And this is the equivalent, the legal bods that Jesus is talking to here. They're the ones who sort of make sure everybody behaves according to the law. So he's tested Jesus and he said, "Teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What's written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself." The so-called golden rule, which Jesus affirms several times in the course of the Gospels in different ways. "You've answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself. So he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" And in reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So to a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him pass by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came..." Samaritan is not a good person from the point of view of this storytelling. He's the baddie. "As he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, and pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I'll reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus said, "Go and do likewise." So we're going to have a think about this whole question of the neighbor. Let me just pray first, and then we'll get stuck into it. Lord Jesus, we thank you for your presence with us this morning and for your love for us. As was shared in those two prophetic words, we thank you for your love for us and for the evidence of that and what we remembered as we shared communion together. The fact that you sacrificed yourself for us. It's hard for us to understand, but we are grateful. Thank you for all that you've given us. All that you've given us. And we thank you for the gifts that people give to this church week in, week out, through the standing orders and things that help us to do what we do. Thank you for those acts of worship and for the way you provide for us. We ask you to come now and be with us as we look at your stories and what you're trying to tell us. Help us to understand and apply it to our lives. In Jesus' name. Amen. If you watch Newsnight, or listen to Radio 5 Live or phone-in programs, there's often similar themes that come up for debate, aren't there? So Alison was telling me that just recently on Radio 5 Live, there was a big debate about hypnobirths. Okay, I don't quite know what that means. I saw a rerun of Britain's Got Talent, where they had a hypno dog on it. Maybe it's hypno things these days. But other things are sort of, is austerity the way to go? That'll be a big debating theme, won't it? Or what's another one? What should our attitude to immigration be? What other things? Have any of you listened to any phone-ins? What do you think are the debating points of the day that people discuss when you get to work and you're standing around having a cup of coffee? Mariah Carey, Beyoncé. Beg pardon? The 7-day NHS. That's because you're a doctor. I'm sure doctors talk about that. Yeah. Anything else? Is The Voice better than The X Factor? What do you think? Who likes The Voice? That's two of us, three of us. X Factor? Nobody. Nobody. That's a pretty poor turnout for British entertainment today. There are various debates, aren't there? In Jesus' day, one of the main debates that they would have was, how do I get to heaven? Why don't you try that at work tomorrow morning? You know, when you're having a cup of coffee. Let's have a debate about how do we get to heaven. It doesn't often happen in our around us. But then it was a real issue. It was one of those regular debates. They would have phone-in programs about it, and Newsnight would return to it at least once a month. And so it's one of those debates that these clerics, these legal bods, they would sit around over a pint of beer at night, and they would chew over this question, and they would throw it at anybody who pretended to be a teacher, who was an up-and-coming sort of leader. And with Jesus, they don't like his celebrity status. They do not like him at all, and so they keep trying to test him, and this is one of the questions they throw at him from time to time. And when he's asked this, sometimes, in some of the other accounts, he gives the sort of the politically correct formula answer. Sometimes he doesn't. This time, he does what he often does, which is he turns the question back and says, what do you think? which is a really good way of making sure you demonstrate who's in charge around here. So he says to this lawyer, what do you think? And the lawyer comes out with the acceptable formula, the politically correct phrase. And Jesus says, you got it. It all feels slightly patronizing. It feels like he's just put the guy in his place. Boom. And it's interesting, just that thing about love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your strength, with all your mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. You know, the golden rule seems to be, which is a quote from Leviticus, seems to be one of the main definitions of Jesus' call on people. And he doesn't do the Winston Churchill, we will fight them on the beaches. He doesn't do the Cameron working class, you know, working hard family, hard working families. He does the love God, love your neighbor as yourself. That's his defining leadership mantra for the disciples. It's very different from other types of leaders. And he's not saying love yourself. That's not a command to love yourself. Okay, he's assuming you're loving yourself. He's assuming that's our default position. We feed ourselves, we try and get shelter and make sure we're safe. And we look after ourselves. So he's assuming that you look after yourself, and there's an element of love in that. And he's saying, as you're doing for yourself, do it for others, and lead off by doing it for God. That's the sort of the mantra, the answer, the correct answer to the question, but it's the one that Jesus focuses his people on. So the lawyer has been put in his place, and he's not happy about that. And he doesn't like being shut up. And so he comes up with a more pointed follow-up. Who is my neighbor? This is another debating point that was popular at the time. So on the nights at Newsnight, when they weren't debating how do I get to heaven, they would often switch to who is my neighbor? That would be one of the discussion points. And the question, the word neighbor, was a bit different from our word neighbor. Our word neighbor is, by and large, we think about the person who lives next door or above or below us. The word neighbor in the Bible is wider than that, and it can be a family member or a friend, or it can be somebody that you have another relationship with. It's a broader spectrum. So today we would probably add to the physical neighbors around us, who live around us, we'd probably think about Facebook friends, our social digital friends. We would probably think about people at work, because in those days they tended to work in their community, whereas we tend to go, many of us travel to work, and we have a different community of neighbors there. However else you defined neighbors, one thing that they weren't, one thing that the Jews did believe that a group of people they believed were not neighbors was everybody who wasn't a Jew. So most of the world wasn't a neighbor. It was everybody within Israel who was potentially a Jew, a neighbor. Now that wasn't what the Bible taught, and the Old Testament prophets frequently tested them on this, but this was the feeling they had. So when Jesus goes on to pick at the thread of that question, who is my neighbor, and he tells the story of the Good Samaritan, he is extending the definition of neighbor way, way, way outside of their relatively narrow boundaries. He says, first of all, love God with everything. And then he assumes we love ourselves, and he says, with that love that we have for ourselves, love other people the same way. Not just Mike and Sarah who are near to me, but people right in the back row, Ian and Karen, and people right outside, and people in a different country, and people who are very different from me. People very unlike me, who maybe aren't first on my list of wanting to care for them. So he, rather than identify a specific neighbor, Jesus is saying, he says that the posture of our lives is to be loving everyone else. Simple. The posture of our lives is to love everyone else. And in this story, he sets up the neighbor, well, they're both neighbors, of course, the one giving the help and the one receiving the help. He sets up the one needing the help as the enemy. Okay, the Samaritan is the enemy. So he's taking love your enemy and he's upgrading it to love your neighbor, and they're making them the same thing. So it moves from being, love your neighbor, moves from being a small upgrade in behavior to be nice to somebody near us, to being a posture of love to those who are very different, not like us at all, and possibly our enemies. Now, frankly, if you're going to take this seriously, you're going to be tested on this within your neighborhoodness. It might be somebody who lives near you who parks their car in a way that irritates you. It might be somebody at the school gate who you simply clash with. It might be extended family. You might have an aunt or a cousin who really, really winds you up. You know, it's possible that it might be somebody in the church. Ooh, ouch. Yeah, somebody in this room who you really don't like and would rather not have to love. Love your neighbor deeply tests your attitude, but also to the asylum seeker and the immigrants trying to get across from Calais and apparently blocking up the surgeries and the hospitals and everything else. It's going to deeply test your attitude to the street drinker, the person who's bothering you on the street for money or just making a nuisance. It's going to deeply test your attitude to the city banker who you think has been really greedy and has got away with it. They're our neighbors. And we're called to love them as we love ourselves. This is why, for me, the UK's current posture towards immigration is, and asylum seekers, is not just shaming. I feel ashamed when I hear what they say, but it's also flying directly in the face of Jesus' commands. So those of you who are followers of Jesus, do not be afraid to stand up and say that you disagree with the way the UK treats immigrants and asylum seekers. I've written to my local MP and the MP for Headingley as well, just making sure they understand where I'm coming from. Let me put that to one side. Let you think about that. Think about your posture in life. Think about your thinking and what you say and what you do. Does it demonstrate as much love for those neighbors who are not close, for those who are not like you, as you have for yourself? So who is my neighbor? Richard and Annie here? Where are they? Richard, oh, you're there. Come up here quickly. Come up here quickly. Rich and Annie have asked their neighbours, they've discovered their neighbours and they've invited their neighbours to come to church. And that's a scary thing to do. And I just wanted to grill them. Come up here. Yeah, that's a bit here. That's there. To ask them just what was it like doing that when they invited the neighbours. So first of all, I haven't particularly briefed them, so I'm not quite sure what they're going to say, and they don't know what I'm going to ask them. But what I want to know is, when the people that you've asked, what was the... How did you get into that conversation? How did you know them? Have you known them a long time? Did they ask you? Just very quickly, what was the circumstance?
We'd known them for a very long time. We were quite good friends. We used to go to their house. They used to come to our house. We used to talk to them separately. And yeah, they were good friends.
And so what were the words you used? What actually came out of your mouth, to which they responded and thought about whether or not they would want to come? What did you do? What did you say?
That was a bit of a gift, really, because I'd known the lady that I asked for quite a long time, and she'd spoken at length about wanting to find out more. And then one day we were out going for a walk, and she said, there must be more to life than this, in the context of discussing our children and this, that, and the other. And I just felt God was there, and God said to me, yeah, you've got to ask her to Alpha because it's tonight. So I did.
What did you actually say?
I said, are you interested in discussing the meaning of life? That's interesting. And it was like a real gift. The words were, you know, like scripted Alpha words. Come along tonight for a free coffee at Costa. You can't go wrong. If you don't like the conversation, we can just have the coffee and leg it.
Excellent. But Richard, have those types of words emerged from you as some sort of invitation to a neighbour? Have you ever thought about that?
Sadly, no.
So the friends that you that you invited, did they come together, or
yeah?
Okay. So what did you feel like when you did in that bit when you were about ready to ask, and what do you feel like when you're faced with somebody and you're thinking I could invite them, but what's going on inside?
And the time when it was really successful was when I was feeling relaxed and I felt that God was there prompting me. I think sometimes you try to push yourself to do it and it's not really quite the right time. And sometimes he'll just give you that time. And when he does, he kind of gives you that special prompt to go with it.
How do you feel about it?
Oh, extremely fearful.
And what are you afraid of?
I really don't know, actually.
It is interesting, isn't it? I'm exactly the same. I'm really afraid, but what am I afraid of? Yeah.
I suppose in the past that I've been afraid of, she'll think I'm a bit weird. She won't want to be my friends anymore.
Okay, thank you very much. That's what it's like, isn't it? They'll think I'm weird. They don't want to be my friend anymore. You've got the best news they've ever heard. You've got the light in their darkness. You've got the forgiveness for their sin. You've got the healing for their pain. And we're afraid that they might not like us anymore. It's a crazy... The enemy does something to our thinking on that. It's crazy, isn't it? Is anybody here who came to church for the first time, or Alpha or something like that, because a neighbor invited them? Yes, Eileen did. Was that... Marwyn invited you, didn't she? Eileen came because Marwyn invited her. You invited you to the carol service, if I remember rightly. Now, isn't that interesting that there's nobody else here? What does it tell us? It tells us that we don't invite our neighbours. Now, I want Leeds Vineyard to be great at being neighbours in Headingley. That's our calling, to minister into Headingley, and we want to be great neighbours and great neighbours to our community here. But that's a bit different. That's a calling to the church as a sort of corporate thing. To you as an individual, God is calling you to be a great neighbour where you live, where you work, with the people around you. He's calling you to love them as you love yourself. Now, last time, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, when I was speaking and I did part one, I handed out this matrix. Have you got it on the screen? And it's slightly different this time. Last time, I handed these out, and I asked you to look around the room and see who was sitting beside you and who was sitting in front of you and who was sitting behind you, those eight places, roughly, and see if you knew their name and anything about them. And it was very interesting that some people didn't know who they were. You come every week, and yet you didn't know the person behind you or in front of you. Has anybody followed up on that? I also asked you to find out something you could pray for them about. Has anybody continued to pray for somebody about something that they... Maybe none of you were here that Sunday, but anybody who was here that Sunday, have you in the follow-up prayed for them about anything? Somebody tell me that you have. Great, thank you. Are you prayed for your wife? That doesn't count. Big pun? I can't hear. For somebody else. Oh, great. Do you remember their name? Mike. Okay, great. Thank you for doing that. This is a slightly awkward moment, but I'm fine with that. I'm challenging you that you need to know who's sitting next to you in this community of faith. This is who we're walking the journey with. You need to know who they are, what their names are, and we need to pray for each other. We need to know what each other needs. If you're a guest here, you can sidestep that awkward moment. If you're not a regular, if you are a regular here, don't. Take it on the chin. Now, I'm going to push that a bit further this time. I'm going to hand these out, and my glamorous assistant, Mike, here at the front. And over here, John. I'm going to hand these out. Can I have one? Thank you. And what I'm going to ask you to do with this, there's some pens and paper down by Alison's ankles. Do you want to pass those around? We're going to take a few minutes on your own. You don't have to talk to anybody else. You don't have to relate to any other human being in the room. All I want you to do is, out of those eight places and around there, roughly speaking, some might be above and below you, depending on where you live, see if you can write down the names of eight people who live, who are sort of your neighbours. Okay? See if you can write them down. Now, when I first did this, I failed miserably, so don't worry about it. See how this is a measure. See what you can write down. Secondly, when you've written down the names, see if you can write something about them that is obvious, like they drive a red car, or they've got 5,000 children, or they work nights. Okay? And then, see if you can write down something about them that you would only know because you've had a conversation with them. Like they're struggling in their marriage, or they're a vegetarian, or whatever. So I'm going to give you 5 minutes to do that, and then we'll have a little discussion, okay? This is for the people who live around you, not today where they're sitting, okay? That was last time. You missed that exciting event. I found that the people around me are very different. There's many committed to other religions, Sikhs, Jews, all sorts. There are some that are much wealthier than I am. There's some that are much poorer than I am. Very different moral codes, ethics, politics, different ages and stages. They work at different hours of the day, but they're still my neighbors. And 5 years ago, Ben, my associate pastor who was preaching last week, embarrassed me. He is my associate. He was preaching in our previous venue. And I didn't realize that an associate pastor could show up, a senior pastor. I'm not into hierarchy, but still, you'd think he'd show a bit more respect and check it out with me first. But he did this exercise, and I failed miserably. I think I knew three names, and I knew quite a lot of things because I knew what everybody drove. I knew all the cars, but I didn't know who was in them. I had all sorts of excuses, you know. Richard said, I don't want that. They might not like me. You know, they might want to come into my house. They might think I'm weird. I'm too busy. I've got to get to work. And they're too busy. Look, they've got to get to work. I had all sorts of excuses, but I'd lived there for 10 years. And I felt God really convict me about it. And I sort of hid in my piece of paper because it looked awful. I preach a good sermon about love your neighbor, and I wasn't doing it. So over the following years, over the last 2 or 3 or 4 years, Alison and I have instigated a street party on our street, the big lunch, which we've done every, is it 5 years now, 4 years? I can't remember. And as a course of arranging it, more than the actual party, the party's great, arranging it, we've had nearly all our neighbours into our house every year, at least two or three times. Many of them have never been in each other's houses before. They've lived there for 50, 60 years. And so now I know all their names, and I know about them, and they... we are able to love our neighbours because we're able to know little things about them. And indeed, they're able to love us. We've just been away recently, and they look after our house and after Alison's dad. It's just that little step forward that Ben nudged me on has transformed it. They become friends, actually, I would say. And yesterday, before I went to work, I work from home, I went for a wander around the neighbourhood, as I often do, to try and wake up and think. And I was praying for the street, and I realised as I walked around that there were over a dozen people I could pray for, specifically as I just walked around our block. And I'm not saying this to big me up, I'm just trying to say what can happen if you're just a little bit obedient. And indeed, I could actually pray for specific things. So for Amanda and Phil, just had a baby. For Anthony, just come out of hospital. For Ian, who's got real business pressures. I was able to pray for them specifically. And we've been able to do things which show that we love our neighbor. It's taken years to get to this point. There's a long way to go. And where I'm failing at miserably is inviting them to anything to do with Alpha or church, whatever. I have invited a few, and they've all said no. But that's a success. To invite is the thing. It's not the result that matters. It's the fact that I got enough of a relationship to be able to say, would you like to come to church? Would you like to come to Alpha? Would you like to come to our carol service? So watch this space. There's a long way to go before we've had a few good conversations about Jesus, but nothing has happened yet. But we had to go through this process first to get to that point. So having filled those pieces of paper in, what I'd like to do in our last few minutes... This is where you're perfectly free to opt out. Say, no, I don't want to do that, David. I'm not playing your game, okay? But if you would like to, I'd love to encourage you just to get over that and to get into twos or threes. And you can, if you don't like the person next to you, go and choose somebody else. That's fine. Well, if it's your husband and wife, you probably shouldn't go and choose somebody else for that reason. Get in the twos and the threes and show them your piece of paper, and if you failed miserably like I did, that's fine. Let's pray for you to do something about it. If you haven't failed and you got some names, anybody got all eight names? Oh, you were there when Ben did it, weren't you? Yeah, that's why you got all eight names. Well done. What I want you to do, this very specific thing, is to pray for each other about what you've got in front of you. And ask the Lord to give you two things. One is, which of these people does he want you to invite to come to church or to Alpha or to the carol service at Christmas? Which of those eight? Okay? Like Annie says, we can't press these things, but God is at work in the lives of all those neighbours around you. All those neighbours. God is at work in them. He hasn't forgotten them. He's loving them. Which of them is now the time for you to say, hey, would you like to come? They might not come, that's fine, but for you to ask. And the second thing is there one thing you can do as an act of love, as an act of kindness for one of those neighbours to show that you love your neighbour? Is there one thing that the Lord prompts you on? Take this person a cake, wash this person's car, babysit these people's kids, whatever it might be. So would you like to get into twos and threes, show each other your pieces of paper, share those thoughts and pray for each other so you may know who to invite and who to do something for? It may be that he doesn't give you anybody to invite. That's fine. Just keep your ears open for when that time does come. We'll do that for two or three minutes, and then I'll ring a bell or do a little dance or something, which means that we've finished and you need to go and get your kids. If at that point you would like us to pray for you, if you need healing for something, or there's just something on your heart that you need prayer for, just come up to the front here and I'll grab somebody and they'll come and pray with you. Okay? But go for it. Get into twos and threes and share. Okay, just one more thing. Just one more thing. If you're a regular here, you know if you're somebody who's going to be coming back most weeks. If you're a regular here, would you give permission to the person you're talking to for them to hold you accountable to it? So if you shared that who the person is that you think the Lord might be inviting, asking you to invite, or if you shared something that you think you could do, give them permission to come back to you next week or the week after or in 6 months' time and say, how's it going? Okay? If you don't give them permission, say so, otherwise they will. Does that make sense? All right? So if you don't want to be held accountable, just say to the person, don't hold me accountable for that. That was just to keep David happy. Okay? When you've done that, please collect your children. God bless. Have a great week. If you'd like us to pray for you, just come up to the front.